Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Was born a twin, separated at birth, cause that little girl wasn't ready for this earth. So the first person I knew left when I drew my first breath, and came back a year later as my sister mum said. Once the carousel's revolving, no stopping or disembarking. Spent a lifetime with the mysteries of Mr. Margins, left home for it, decades on a pilgrimage. A ghost author writing essays in the wilderness. I don't converse with the Holy Ghost often, only in times of blind panic where my atheism is left behind stranded.
What else?
I hope you're all comfy, people are so hungry, I wonder what that says about my country. And where I come from, food banks, bankers crash. Try to be a good man is a thankless task. Good people carry the weight of the world until their ankles snap. Financial cats, futures are guaranteed like a banker's draft. I was born clumsy, a crumpler. I take words and rearrange them when I find them jumbled up. Grew up on the outskirts of nowhere, just beyond it. Nothing existed in the void until I drew it, if I'm honest. A hyperactive kid, restless and unsettled. Mouth tasting a metal, building walls out of Lego. My father was a rebel, so I became an echo. He said you got to cut the strings on your own arms to meet your petal. Mind the gap when the lighting from this place. Mind the gap when the lighting from this place. Mind the gap when the lighting from this place. Mind the gap when the lighting from this place. When I get agitated, words are my rattling. If life's a jotter, then I'm living in the margins that I scribble in. But sometimes when you're on the outside looking in, you get a better view of how the world spins. Dystopia, it's a word that's overused, but that doesn't mean its meaning doesn't hold the truth. The loneliest muse I've been beholden to you since the fallopian tubes. My colloquial roots challenge colonial views reported as news. Celebrity sweat patches interrupt me while I'm trying to think. I close my eyes, cover my ears and dial a drink. Spying search engines try and tell me not to think this. I spend my evenings trading riddles with the sphinxes, and my days languishing and listless. That's just how it is when language is your mistress. I've got no problem with authority, I represent outside and we're holding a majority, man. Fuck your in-crowds, little cliques and cozy-ups. Your number days get shorter the longer you're ignoring us. I channel hate, love, fear, hope and lust into broken words that fill, spill and overflow from lips like blood from open cuts. Mr. Margins, life on the periphery. Blend into a crowd, step on stage and then pontificate. I was born with every Venn diagram intersected and spent a lifetime on edging on the edges. Mind the gap when the lighting from this place. Mind the gap when the lighting from this place. Mind the gap when the lighting from this place. Mind the gap when the lighting from this place.
Welcome to Podcart and welcome to another special edition, and today's guest is Dave Hook, aka Solar Eye. Hello.
Hi there, how you doing?
I'm good, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad.
Good, good. So, when was the last time that we kind of had a chat with one another.
I think the last time we did a podcast thing was before Reject, Stanley Lord Reject, so I reckon 2012.
Christ.
Yes. It's been a while.
It has been a while.
Lots to catch up on.
Oh my God. So you've written an album.
Yes.
And is this the first one under Solar Eye?
Yeah, it's the first time I've ever released an album under Solar Eye. I've done some other bits and pieces, did a wee EP in 2012 and stuff, but I've never got around to releasing a Solar Eye record before.
Yeah. So, yeah. The album's called All These People Are Me. And you have, I've said this to you before I started recording the podcast, but for me it's the best work that you've done. And that's not because I, you know, didn't like anything that you've done previously. There just seems to be this real confidence about this album that I've heard a confidence before, but this is really you. It feels really kind of authentic for you. I don't know if that's fair to say.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's very nice to hear because it's been done. It's felt like it's been in a vacuum for a while when we've been working on it. I think certainly that's what we were trying to do with the record. All the music on the record was made by Samson, the drummer from Stanley Odd, and Harvey Cartel. So it's been a really nice experience in terms of like trying to match words to music, and we spent longer on it than I've ever spent on a record. I think we spent about 2.5 years on it. There's probably only 3 songs out of 14 that have still got the original music that first came with the words. So mm-hmm. they've gone through new incarnations until we've ended up with something that works, I think.
Yeah.
And the sort of concept of the record about like is about contradictions a lot and in continuities, and then the music is maybe the continuity that ties it all together.
So the contradictions thing I'm going to come onto later. I'll get you warmed up first before we get onto the serious chat. So yeah. I asked you to pick 6 songs, which is a mean feat, and you've picked some absolute belters. There's one that I've got a question mark over, but again, we'll get to that. So Michael Jackson, Smooth Criminal.
Yeah.
This song makes me laugh because, do you remember the Sega, Mega Drive maybe, the Moonwalker game?
Very vaguely, I do, yeah.
So, and my brother used to do all the moves and sing, and he, you know, the high-pitched singing and everything. So I know that probably won't be funny for anyone apart from me and the mental images have, but Smooth Criminal.
It's funny you should say that though, because I think there was one kid in every class when that record came out. I was in primary school. There was one kid in every class that could do all the moves and was the coolest kid in the school for 10 minutes because of it.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I put it in there. It's funny, I know you were saying this before we started, but it was really hard to pick these like six songs, and I've kind of tried to pick songs that I've got a story or a reason, rather than they're not necessarily my favourite songs, but they've got something to talk about. So Michael Jackson Bad was the first record I ever bought. So I bought it on vinyl from WH Smith's in Airdrie Main Street, and I was dead excited about buying my first record, and that's what it was. Actually, Smooth Criminal had a damaged groove, so it kept sticking on that. I remember it kept sticking, and my dad had said, do you want us to take it back to the shop? And I was like, no, I think it'll be okay. And then a couple of weeks later, I was like, it's still sticking, can we take it back? And he was like, no, it's too late now. So I was stuck with it. But at the time, I used to listen to music on his record player, and he had one speaker. I mean, the configuration was atrocious. He had one speaker up on a shelf and one underneath a desk on the floor, so I would lie on the floor and listen to it and listen to like his vinyl collection and then listen to this. And Smooth Criminal really stuck out because the story's really, well, it's a storytelling song, mm-hmm. and it's not quite clear exactly what's happening in it, but it builds tension all the way throughout. So like as a kid, when you're trying to figure out what's going on in the stories and the songs, then it really kind of sort of captured my attention.
And you've said in a few interviews that stories are, you know, you love stories, you love storytelling within the music you listen to, you know, especially in hip hop, you love that storytelling element. And now as a father, do you really kind of inject that into your children's lives as well?
Yeah, I mean, you're right, I do love stories and song, and I almost picked six songs with stories in them and then didn't.
Yeah.
It's interesting being a dad now. Like, I love telling the kids stories. I love reading stories. I love them making up stories to me. I love trying to make stories up and keep their interest. And it's interesting for me as well to see what they're starting to find interesting to listen to musically. Mm-hmm. Both of them like a Proclaimers song called Walking By, which was in the musical for the Proclaimers, I think. But they both asked for that, although the older ones had enough of that one now. My older boy loves A$AP Rock, and another tune that we've talked about, which is bizarre because A$AP Rock can be really difficult and complex to get into, but he likes that one. It's got a cool video. And recently, I've done a little bit of work with an organisation called Vox Liminis that go into prisons and you do prison writing workshops, which is amazing, and really, I've really enjoying the work that I've been involved in with them. And one song that was written in Castle Huntley, that was written, the guy that wrote it for his two kids. And I was working on the mix of it, and Callum just kept coming in and wanting me to play it over and over again. And was going, I wrote it down what he said. He was like, that man has a beautiful voice.
Oh, wow.
So I thought that was cool.
Yeah. And so the work within the prisons, when did you start that?
I mean, I've only done a couple of sessions with the guys, really, but it's Louis from Admiral Fowl that got me into doing it. And he works with Vox. He's sort of the director, I guess, of that Distant Voices project. And he's got a great bunch of people going in and doing stuff. And I've been in and done something with them at Pullman and then up at Castle Huntley. And I've been in to visit someone in Kilmarnock Prison as well and just work on some individual bits and pieces.
Did you go in with a completely open mind, or did you have any stereotypes that you thought, oh my God, I am shitting myself?
I've got quite a lot previous experience of working in community projects and with young people and in various things. So to a certain degree, I was kind of comfortable in that I knew what I was going to do. But I think any situation that you've not been in before, then there's obviously anxiety about how it's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And probably you're focused on making sure that at the beginning you just come across in the right way, that you get people interested and excited about wanting to do stuff. So in that way, that's the same probably for lots of others.
What was the most memorable thing that came out of that? Obviously, apart from, you know, making the music.
I get so much out of it as a writer, through just having the time. If you're doing 3-day full sessions, having the time to actually look at how other people write. And I find that in this, exactly the same as in like the songwriting festivals that like Finlay Napier does and stuff like that, and any other project where you're working with other writers as well, then I'm getting so much of just when I'm not doing something and listening to what they're talking about and hearing about how they write, and then looking at how everybody individually sits down and comes up with stuff. I think like you always end up taking away things that you're like, well, I'm going to use that myself as a way of writing or as a different way of thinking about things.
Moving on to your next song. So this was a bit of a... this stood out for me. So John Mayall.
Yeah, I mean, I've been hugely influenced by my dad's love of music and taste in music. And so like that... like a lot of the records that I was listening to before I bought my first Michael Jackson record was blues and sort of late 60s and early 70s records and folk music. I liked Fairport Convention. I loved John Mayall. I liked Cream and all these sorts of records. And he introduced me to Zappa as well, which kind of took me in a whole different direction. And I remember him playing me this record when I was like about 7 or 8, and listening to that song and thinking, I'm going to learn to play that one day. So that it just really caught me. And I did learn to play it. I don't play it particularly well, but I managed to bash it out. Thank you. must have kind of stuck with me, because Marsha's Mood, I ended up calling a poem that is in the Neuriki anthology.
Right.
But then it got misprinted, so in there it's called Marsha's Mood, and I didn't read it properly when they sent me the proofs. And then that poem ended up becoming a song on All These People Are Me called Summer, Some Buzz. So
yeah.
It's kind of, I feel like, even though it has no musical relevance to the original piece, it's sort of come all the way through.
Yeah, threaded through. The album, we were just saying during the break that you said that you had a lot of fear and anxiety in making that. We'll just call it out now.
Yeah, yeah.
Where did that stem from?
I don't know. From kind of the weight I'd put on myself in terms of what I wanted to make it. But more broadly than that, I think for the last couple of years, last year and a half, I probably properly experienced anxiety for the first time in my life, like what anxiety really is.
Mm-hmm.
Like that sometimes debilitating panic, which I wasn't familiar with. So that was happening as well. And it was kind of about like just trying to do too much and feeling the responsibility of having to deliver things for people and make all the pieces of your life keep going.
But do you think that when you say deliver those things, is that because of the expectation and pressure, the standards you had set for yourself?
I think it's standards and promises that I'd made for things,
yeah.
You know, and then feeling like you've got to make them all happen. So I felt like there was loads of peaks and troughs, and then creatively there was loads of peaks and troughs, because you just keep asking yourself if what you're doing, if it's going to have, like, you want to write something that you feel has a value to it or is any good, and is honest and authentic and real, but you're constantly asking yourself, is anybody going to listen to this when it's finished, you know? So it's just like this sort of peaks and troughs of like despair and then belief and then despair. And then the other thing is, I saw an interview with a rapper called Evidence,
right.
Who used to be in Dilated Peoples.
Yeah.
And I think I'm a big fan of his and of Dilated Peoples, but I'm almost even more a fan of just hearing him speak. And what he was saying was, he was saying, like, as a guy who's had a career for quite a length of time, he's considered an underground artist in the States. We would consider him a mainstream
huge
artist,
yeah.
Just because the difference in terms of what we call underground. But so he was saying, like, maintaining that output and that quality as you get older becomes more difficult, because there are more other things in life that require your attention. So, like, you would ideally lock yourself away for 3 or 6 months, like, focus, make something, and then put it out straight away. But in reality, life gets in the way, and those 3 months become 2 years, and trying to keep your focus over that just ends up with lots more kind of depths and then highs.
But making music obviously is such a deeply personal thing, and you invest so much passion that I guess that when you put that out there for people to judge, that it's like a dagger to the heart when you maybe don't get the praise or the expectation that you want.
Yeah, or even just if it doesn't connect with anybody, I think, you know. I think that's probably something that I was considering, like, or just if it, yeah, just, I'm not so much concerned with whether it's praised or anything like that, but it would be nice to release something and then have people go, yeah, cool, I've got that, or yeah, that made some sense to me.
Yeah, no, totally. You know? Yeah. The Tricky song, that Tricky is one of my favourite artists, I guess just because of Bristol and his work with Portishead, and obviously Portishead on that track, and Massive Attack, and you've got, you know, all these people. When did you first hear that song, and when did you really kind of think, God, this guy's awesome?
95, I think.
Yeah.
Is that when it came out, Max and Clay? I don't know.
94, 95, yeah.
Thereabouts.
Yeah.
So it would have been round about then, and I could have picked a whole bunch of songs from that time period. I could have picked Glory Box with the Portishead tune that it comes from. And that, or anything from that Portishead record, probably. But this particular song, like, I just think its delivery is amazing. It's it's engaging and it's otherworldly. It sort of takes you into that world.
I stand firm for a soil. Liquor I come for. Trust me, just be stitchy. And it's round the corner where I shelter. It's something a schism. The living out of scout. If you believe or deceive, common sense as shit you see. Let me take you down the corridors of my life. And when you want to, you want to your preference. No need to answer till I take further evidence. I seem to need a reference to get residence. A reference to your preference to say I'm a good neighbor, I trust. So judge me from my labor. The bottom ensures my good behavior. The constant struggle ensures my insanity. Passing the ignorance ensures the struggle for my family. We're hungry, beware of our appetite. Distant drums ringing news of a kill tonight. The kill which I share with my passengers. We take our fill, take our fill, take our fill. I stand firm for our soil. Liquor I come for, so they juice me, seduce me. Dress me up in stitchy. Confused by different memories. Details of Asian remedies. Conversations of what should become of enemies. My brain thinks bomb-like. So I listen, he's a calm type. As I grow, and as I grow collective. Before the move, sit on the perspective. Mr. Quail in the crevice and watches from the precipice. Imperial passage. Heat from the sun someday slowly passes. Until then, you have to live with yourself. Until then, you have to live with yourself. I stand firm for our soil. Liquor I come for. So they juice me, seduce me. Dress me up in stupidity.
And it's round the corner where I shelter. Living in schizos. We're living on a skelter. If you believe I deceive, then common sense says you will see.
Thinks bomb like, my brain thinks bomb like, bomb like, bomb like, my brain thinks bomb like. Beware of our appetite.
It used to be on the jukebox in the staging post where I used to drink in Airdrie. So it was, I would put the song on at a certain point in the night when I was steaming, and it felt like it really sort of soundtracked the state that you were in and the place that you were in at the time. And it's kind of just stuck with me ever since.
I mean, your music collection that maybe you listen to now, do you listen to a lot of new music, or do you still kind of dip a lot back into past?
I think I move between the last 5 years and the 1990s an awful lot. I don't know how much I listen to like the early 2000s at the moment, but yeah. I try to force myself regularly to listen to new music, and so, you know, like streaming services are brilliant for that. So it's great to be able to delve into new stuff. And I listen to everything, so I listen to like a new music playlist of like whatever is like mainstream popular at the moment, and I'll flick through it. Some things will blow me away and other things won't. And then I try to listen to as many, just pick as many different things you, as that are going to give you, like podcasts and arranged others, curated playlists, so that you're going to get things you'd never come across.
Yeah.
And but then when I look at my daily mix on Spotify, three of the five options are probably all 1990s hip hop.
Yeah.
So, which is great if that's what you want to listen to, but you're not really going to ever find anything new in there, you know.
And with regards to hip hop now compared to the 90s and even before that, where are there any kind of new artists that you think, I'm really liking this, or do you just, is it just kind of passed you by, this new breed of rappers? And
it's funny you should say that. I like the ASAP guys. Yeah. I like ASAP Ferg and ASAP Rocky. I like new music by underground hip hop artists. So the Rhymesayers label, like, I follow quite religiously to see what's coming. They're often older, established artists that are still releasing music in a sort of alternative area.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone from Brother Ali to anything by ASAP Rock, to be honest. There's an artist coming out next week called Prof, who I hadn't heard of before, and I've really been really into the first two singles he released from them. I'm still like fiending for new hip hop in terms of the sort of future Migos type type stuff. Most of it doesn't really hit for me.
Yeah.
But I don't feel bad about that. Like, it's not for me necessarily. I'm not bemoaning the state of hip hop at the moment. I'm just aware that that's not a place I'm in.
Yeah. And so ASAP Rock, that you've mentioned a couple of times, and one of the songs that you've picked, Kirby, he's got a really identifiable style. His vocal, you can tell straight away who it is.
Yeah.
What was it that you connected with?
Do you know what? For a long time with ASAP Rock, I didn't connect with him at all.
Oh, wow.
Like, in the late 90s and early noughties, I just never quite got into him, like, because he's so wordy and lyrically dense. It just didn't move me. Sometimes I could see the technicalities of it, but it didn't hit for me. And his last two records have really changed that for me. I thought on his second last record, there was a song called Ruby 81, which was just an amazing piece of storytelling. It was one of those ones that's only about 2 minutes long, and it had me, I was listening in the car, and by the end I was like on the edge of my seat and almost wanted to turn it off because I didn't even want to know what happened at the end of this story, and then had to listen. It's a story about a little girl, two or 3 year old kid at a 4th of July fireworks, and then her mum puts her in the booster seat and she gets back out again, and you're like just, you know, totally holding your breath to hear what happens. And it's amazing writing. And then his last record, The Impossible Kid, I just think is like a masterclass in how to get older and keep writing and still be relevant. And okay, your topics change, your style changes. And so it's just a whole bunch of stories that it proves like what a skilled writer he is, to make you interested and take you into his world when the world maybe isn't quite as wild or out of control as it is as somebody in their early 20s.
Shots of hot sergeant, vaccine queen deemed church socks hostage. 9 weeks awesome, hides in a slipper. Look in her eye like she might be a wizard. Cold met a cat lady in a parking lot. She got the heroes of tomorrow in a cardboard box. And probably hoarding 40 more in the corners of Fort Knox. Swap 20 on a spot and cop the warlock. Back at the haunt, found God in the hamper. Briefs on her head, playing looking with a panther. Good around misery and golden era samplers. Jeopardy and wheel at the heels of her handlers. Bet, more than a bet to worship, it's an MD. Recommended sense of purpose here to bat around keys and the means to euphoria. Soon to be held the greatest of all warriors.
Hey, Under a fort bubble rich with bowls of goldfish. Skittish in a company of stranger danger. Otherwise chase drawstrings, tails and lasers. In a steel cage match with a maze of cables. Brazen, game face based on Azazel. Oversized ears up, puke in the meow mix. Shred a pair of earbuds, remedy is cowlick. Thanks, curbs looking like a millie. Keep an old man sharp, keep a cold chantilly. Spun plum dizzy in a frisky moment. Never lands on her feet, though I think she's broken. Mouse are in training, nap on the toaster. Decorator cubicle with dogs playing poker. 15 years taking prescriptions, now a shrink like, I don't know, maybe get a kitten.
Applying that to your own kind of storytelling, you, I was saying this to you, that you've got this way of writing that you don't literally kind of put something out, you don't literally call something out, but you'll use metaphors and imagery to do your own storytelling, but it's very much for the listener to adapt it to their own experiences. And I said to you that for me, that's the kind of truest form for lyricism music for me. Some of the stuff that you do write about, you've talked about contradictions, for example. I'm going to put you on the spot. What are some of the contradictions that you've seen either in people or society that you just think, wow?
Right, okay. I think contradictions are like part of human nature, right? And I think like that almost seems to get forgotten in the virtual world now. Like that, I used to think it was like bad enough for politicians because they're not allowed to be wrong and they're not allowed to change their mind and they're not allowed to contradict themselves. But now we kind of seem to hold everybody up to that standard all the time.
Yeah.
And if you don't contradict yourself, then there's no growth, and it's okay to change your mind, and it's okay to actually feel this way and this way, even if they don't, there's no way those two things should exist together.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. I guess for me, it's like people are not allowed to make mistakes anymore.
Yeah.
Because
I think maybe in the past, a lot of those mistakes were only really shared amongst a small group in the real world, whereas now those mistakes are like written down and appear forever for all to see.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're figuring things out or just literally changing your mind about something, then that there's a trail that follows that.
Yeah.
So like the All These People Are Me thing sort of came about a bit because of that, like that idea that we're put in boxes or categories and you're like this so you can't be like that, or you've done these things which precludes you from ever being able to do these things. And it's human nature to categorise and put people in boxes because it's how we make sense of the world. But at the same time, it becomes limiting and reductionist as a result, and it limits your options. And everybody has experience of that, you know, from the first day in the playground and the tribes that emerge or the tribes that you're put in without even really having a choice about it. So it's part of life to be contradictory. We're all complex, contradictory human things. And then I guess hip-hop as a culture, I think, and as a global genre, has suffered from that categorization because its commercial success and commodification has actually reduced what it can be down to this sort of, very often, this gangster rap or the gangster pimp whole trinity of like, that's all it can be.
Yeah.
Which means that this beautiful culture that was meant to be about expressing like minorities or alternative voices or different backgrounds then only has one way of representing itself, which is the antithesis of what it was meant to be, I think, or one of the things I see it to be. And then at the same time, I love gangster rap and I love braggadocious rap and punchline rap, and I love like dense linguistics like Pharaoh Monch of Aesop Rock, and I love metaphors and street stories and all these things. So I was like, well, how can you put all of that into a record and have there be any continuity to it?
Mm-hmm.
So then, it, like in my head, it felt like the continuity came from the contradictions.
Yeah. And are there any notable times that you've contradicted yourself?
Well, in life?
Yeah. Or in your music?
Yeah,
I guess.
I mean, I'm sure there are, probably continually.
Yeah.
I don't know. But yes, I'm sure there are.
And
I definitely do on the record, I'm sure, because I'm at one moment probably criticising, like, straight up, like, punchlines and bars, and then in the next verse doing exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
And I think I walk that fine line all the time where I use punchlines and metaphors to, like, in a hip-hop format to express that sort of, like, braggadocious dominance. So I'm actually doing the thing I'm criticising as I do it.
So Scottish hip hop, you've been called an ambassador and all this, and I know that you don't. I've read again that you don't like to be that authority. It's more about learning all the time and learning from others and being part of something. The Scottish hip hop seems to have been stereotyped at times as being more of a humorous thing, and it's about piss taking and all that kind of stuff, and at times it's not been taken as seriously, and it's been very white as well. As a white male within that, genre, is at times do you find it quite difficult, or have you ever experienced any kind of criticism for that?
I definitely have been criticised and dismissed. As doing anything valid in terms of creativity in the past, I think less so now than it used to be. It absolutely has suffered in the past for being considered to be a novelty rather than a valid art form. I find almost certainly less and less that is ever considered to be the case within the wider music community in Scotland. So it's more often a case about breaking down people's preconceptions about what it is than about people actually genuinely believing it doesn't have any worth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and hip-hop itself has always lent itself to voices from the margins and voices, unheard voices and alternative perspectives, which is why I think you find it taking root regularly in working class communities. You're absolutely right that when you look at it demographically, it's definitely like a very sort of mainly within Scotland, like a white culture. That's probably also representative of Scotland's wider demographics.
Yeah.
And I hope that as those demographics change, then we would see that in the music as well.
Do you think that there's a further kind of point to prove because you're Scottish? Some of the comments that I've not heard about you, but of Scottish hip hop in general, is people taking the piss out of the accent, and that being a form as well.
Yeah, I think in Scotland we've got such a strange and really complicated relationship with our own culture.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously the Scottish cringe, which was much stronger in the past than it is now, but it still exists, and we still have a problem with how we sound and how we present. And we've also have this naturally self-derogatory sense of humour culturally, where we can't say anything good about ourselves, and if anybody else seems to, then we have to put them down. So we've got this really complicated feeling of like of self, sometimes self-imposed underdog status, you know. And so there's so many like different threads interwoven into that, and lots of it's to do longer ago, I'm sure, with Scotland's relationship with the rest of the United Kingdom, which is again a sort of dichotomy in itself, because in some ways you could say we've had the way that we speak or the way that we live our lives imposed upon us. But in other ways, since 1707, Scotland has been part of the UK, so has also been complicit in all sorts of horrific things around the globe. So it's not a very simple way to say poor us or this caused this because of this.
Yeah.
But there's all these complicated things, and then accent in Scottish music has just like gradually become more prominent, hasn't it? You know, so like for me that began, although the Proclaimers were doing it in the late 1980s, and I now have such a respect for the Proclaimers as songwriters and for what they did.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, I didn't like it. It wasn't for me. So it was more when Belle and Sebastian and Arab Strap and bands like that started doing it in the sort of Glasgow indie scene that the Scottish accent started to come into music for me. And then you fast forward, you know, you've got like, well, Biffy Clyro and Twin Atlantic and,
yeah.
and Fighting Rabbit and artists that are global
yeah.
singing in Scottish accents. So there's been that slow process. And I mean, I could go on about accent for days, because it's also very difficult for us. It's easier for a rapper than a singer to go into a Scottish accent, actually, because we're so used to that mid-Atlantic voice, which is sung at the back here in your palate, but all our words in Scottish palate are at the front of your mouth, so you end up with that Paolo Nutini thing where it doesn't sound like it's really from anywhere, because he's trying to voice a Scottish accent but sing from the back of his throat. So yeah, the accent is fascinating and really interesting.
Yeah.
It's actually a lot simpler for rappers than anyone else, I think, because basically there's no way to even consider being authentic without using your own accent.
Mm-hmm. So, Eminem. I always thought that I would never get Eminem to play, I would never play Eminem on a podcast, and now
I can understand that, yeah.
Yeah, so let's
I could have picked, you know what, this was the one I almost didn't put on, because I think there's other tunes I could put. I think it's a very obvious white guy's hip hop tune to put on.
Do you like violence?
Yeah,
wanna
yeah,
see
yeah.
me stick 9-inch nails to each one of my eyelids?
Uh-huh.
Wanna copy me and do exactly like I did?
Yeah,
try
yeah.
sit and get fucked up worse than my life is?
Uh-huh.
My brain's dead weight. I'm trying to get my head straight, but I can't figure out which Spice Girl I wanna impregnate. And Dr. Dre said,
Slim Shady, you a basic. Why's your face red? Man, you wasted.
Well, since age 12, I felt like I'm someone else, cause I hung my original self from the top bunk with a belt. Got pissed off and ripped Pamela Lee's tits off, and smacked her so hard I knocked her clothes backwards like crisscross. I smoke a fat pound of grass and fall on my ass faster than a fat bitch who sat down too fast. Come here, slut. Shady, wait a minute. That's my girl, dawg. I don't give a fuck. God sent me to piss the world off.
Hi, my name is
what?
My name is
teacher wanted to flunk me in junior high. Thanks a lot. Next semester I'll be 35. I smacked him in his face with an eraser. Chased him with a stapler. Stapled his nuts to a stack of paper. Walked in a strip club. Had my jacket zipped up. Blast a bartender. Then stuck my dick in a tip cup. Extraterrestrial. Running over pedestrians in a spaceship while they screaming at me.
Let's just be friends.
99% of my life I was lied to. I just found out my mom does more dope than I do. I told her I'd grow up to be a famous rapper, make a record about doing drugs and name it after. You know you blew up when the women rush your stands, try to touch your hands like some screaming Usher fans. This guy at White Castle asked for my autograph, so I signed it. Dear Dave, thanks for the support, asshole.
My name is
Dre, don't just stand there, operate. I'm not ready to leave, it's too scary to die. I'll have to be carried inside the cemetery and buried alive. Am I coming or going? I can barely decide. I just drank and fit the vodka, dare me to drive?
Go ahead.
All my life I was very deprived. I ain't had a woman in years, and my palms are too hairy to hide.
Whoops.
Clothes ripped like the Incredible Hulk. I spit when I talk, I fuck anything that walks.
Come here.
When I was little, I used to get so hungry, I would throw fits. How you gonna breastfeed me, mom? You ain't got no tits. I lay awake and strap myself in the bed with a bulletproof vest on and shoot myself in the head.
Bang.
I'm steaming mad. And by the way, when you see my dad, tell him that I slit his throat in this dream I had.
My name is...
There's loads of more interesting things I could put on. But in 1998, 1999, if we're talking about like having an impact, then this, the first Eminem, the first major Eminem record had such an impact. And it had a huge impact on me in terms of going from being a rap fan to being someone that thought maybe I could rap.
Eminem is quite a controversial figure. I mean, he now has obviously... I know the impact that this record, the Will My Name Is, had, because that album, obviously, the Dido collaboration, you had it was on constant rotation and you couldn't get away from it. The album, I was remembering that every second or third person that I seemed to speak to had bought it. Just because it just seemed to make, I don't know, it seemed to kind of break barriers and so on, whatever you want to call it. I was, luckily, that was my DJ Shadow and Mr. Scruff phase, so I was quite happy at that point.
Which are great records,
He has got, like, the controversy thing. Now, again, he's a major contradiction for me. So he's at the moment, obviously, Donald Trump seems to be his main focus of shooting down. But his lyrics, I mean, there was an article put out, and there was 19 occasions or 19 parts of songs where he'd talked about, you know, he'd used homophobic, you know, content or rape culture or, you know, I mean... One of the questions that I wanted to ask you was, and I've asked this to quite a few people, artists that have gone through and they've maybe done something or they've said something that's really either controversial or something that is deemed as pretty bad on the grand scheme, separating their music from them as a person and what they do, where do you stand on that?
I think, first of all, probably everyone has to draw their own line for that, don't you? Like with any other ethical decision you make in your life, it's got to be on an individual basis. There's absolutely loads of things that he's written that are problematic. There's also a situation I'm finding myself in that all sorts of things I listened to when I was in my early 20s, I now don't want to listen to and have no interest in, and actually don't, like... feel a bit uncomfortable listening to. So I guess part of that's about, like, I wonder how much of that is about just growing up and how much of it is also about how much culture has changed. It's probably a combination of the two. So I can recognize all those things, and as a result there's definitely songs that I wouldn't even have selected, But if in terms of why I picked My Name Is, like the impact that that had and the blueprint that it was in terms of style and content and delivery, the punchline rap element of it, just how fully formed he was as a character from his very first single.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, and I mean, to look at it just analytically and, like you say, remove yourself from looking at it as a human being and look at it as the artistic output, no white rapper had managed to achieve that level of authenticity in what had managed to remain and be preserved as an as a African American culture. And there was reasons for that, because of look at what happened to the jazz and the blues and to previous cultures that had been developed, if not purely by African American input, certainly predominantly or having a huge amount of that, that was then taken up by white artists that took it around the globe, made a huge amount of money out of it, appropriated it and didn't show any respect for where it came from.
Mm-hmm.
So there were whole reasons why hip-hop was protected in that way and nurtured. What Eminem was able to do was position himself as not only outside the underdog in as a white person trying to be accepted into black society, but also as an outcast that was unaccepted in white culture too. So as a creation, it's
and just, is that something you identify with then?
I mean, I think everybody growing up in their youth identifies with outsiderdom and feeling put upon or, you know, misunderstood and all these sorts of things. So that combined, from a personal perspective, I identified with the creation.
Yeah.
And it was energetic and humorous and great fun, the wordplay, and I could geek out on the lyrical construction and all these sorts of things. But I think to take a step back and look at it and look at it in terms of how he constructed that identity, it's really interesting that the identity was constructed in that way and then managed to negotiate those places and put them in places that nobody really managed to go before.
Mm-hmm.
So, that, I mean, yeah, but I say all this completely agreeing with you and understanding that, that it's not as simple as that. I also haven't listened to Eminem for about 10 years. I mean, like, and that's not an ethical or a moral decision. I've just not been moved or interested in anything he's done for a long time.
Yeah, and but that can apply to I don't know how many artists.
Exactly.
Isn't it?
Yeah. So it's just I think it's a shame because I think someone with that amount of skill and talent, I haven't seen him grow. I haven't seen him mature into something else. I feel like creatively he's stuck being what he was.
And in comparison to artists like ASAP Rock. Do you find that he's really kind of managed to do that?
And Jay-Z, if you were to look at somebody who on a similar level, who's like such like a huge commercial success, with 444, Jay-Z managed to release an album that transformed hip hop because it allowed him to grow older, which is a taboo in hip hop. It allowed him to be penitent and to admit his flaws. And all these sorts of things. So Jay-Z proved that you can be that big an artist, you can have that big a back catalogue and that much baggage and still evolve.
Mm-hmm.
And I just didn't see that with Eminem's work.
It's fascinating. But Buck 65, the DJ Signify remix, this is my first introduction.
Yeah.
And automatically I liked it because it taps into what I've mentioned previously, like DJ Shadow mm. and so on. So tell me about this one.
I first heard this in, I think, about 2004. I was in a band called Disciples of Panic Earth, and the DJ worked in a record shop, and they'd been sent a free copy of this DJ Signify record. And I didn't really know Buck 65 before then either. The whole record is sort of dream slash nightmare like, and the lyrics have that thing where they're telling a story but they're also open enough that they allow you to kind of inject yourself into the story or fill in the blanks a bit.
I was waiting never took his hand, even though I did have several chances. Everybody slept when the morning dew turned to frost. Darkness moved in and somebody burned a cross. A girl named Stella Kewin was prettier than you'd imagine. The town should have given her the crown for the beauty pageant. But instead, some local pinheads started spreading rumors about the Kewins being inbreds. And what's worse, people believed it, cause the family was dirt poor and down on their luck. So that made it hurt more, picking up garbage and mowing the grass. At this point, Stella stopped going to class. You know how they ridicule a kid in school, and this shit's enough to make anybody feel like a misfit. She made herself invisible and hid inside a house of mirrors. Whenever the fear stops, so do the teardrops. But fear is forever, and lies become legend, eventually growing slowly, exponentially. She should have been a cover girl, treated like a princess, but she's an enigma, haunted by the stigma of incest. She tried to hide the scars. Her name reminds me of the stars. I saw diamonds divide in the corners of her eyes. She tried to hide the scars. Her name reminds me of the stars. I saw diamonds divide in the corners of her eyes. One horse town known for the most softness. Little old schoolhouse, burned down post office. Blueberries and bulrushes, a tree with a tire swing. Volunteer, fireman, spare, the whole entire thing. Stella was heartbroken, decided to start smoking. Bad taste in her mouth, she grew into a sad face. Her few friends were worried, her parents were always proud of her, but she never escaped from under the cloud cover. A woman reduced, she was eaten by a monster. And after all these years have passed, it still haunts her. It whispers her name when she's trying instead to just listen to music when she's lying in bed. Now the story of Stella is one that every child knows, but the witch in the woods is more like a wild rose. She tried to hide the scars. Her name reminds me of the stars. I saw diamonds divide in the corners of her eyes. Stars. Her name reminds me of the stars. I saw diamonds divide in the corners of her eyes.
This is the hidden track at the end, which was actually on another sort of album of his. It, for me, it was one of the first times, it was a bit revolutionary because it's not urban at all. It's somebody telling stories about being from a really rural background and in the middle of nowhere, and it feels just as vital and exciting and urgent as Nas telling us in New York State of Mind about Queensbridge, New York.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the imagery felt more like what I could identify with growing up. So I guess I could relate to that. And I think the storytelling is really clever. So it's a beautiful song. It's a really sad song. He says it's a true song as well. And it's also written very cleverly because it feels very simple, but if you actually start to look at the lyric construction, there's a whole load of complex multisyllabics that are in no way burden or weigh down the delivery of the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think one thing about, for me, about hip-hop is that because just it's got so much higher word count, just purely practically because you can fit many more words in, then sometimes it, you know what you were saying about how songs, the like sometimes your favourite songs are the ones where you can identify with them, so very often that's because the lyrics are just vague enough that you can make them apply to you. But sometimes in hip-hop that's really hard because it's got such a bigger word count, it's so much more descriptive and specific that very quickly it becomes clear what it's about. So for me, like, really good writing like this has to like paint the scenery and draw the characters and make the characters move, and then before the first chorus, and it has to hope that by that point you're so invested in the story like a film that you want to know what happens next.
Yeah.
And I think he does that there, so he draws the scenery and he draws the background, then he introduces the characters, and then by the first chorus you're like, you're invested.
Yeah. But I think that you've got a very similar style in that there's, you're hooked and you're just, you're kind of following everything you're saying, and you find yourself going, oh my God, that's just so clever the way that he's used those, you know, just the way that you word things. And I think compared, I'm going to blow your smoke up your ass now. I think compared to so many other people that have done hip-hop in Scotland, and I think compared to a lot of people that are on a, you know, your peers, I do think you stand out in that respect. Your intelligence and your kind of social commentary, it screams.
I think writing is just about trying to find your own way of saying things in your own voice, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm blown away by the work of like the folks I would consider my peers in rap. But I think everyone that does it that really well has spent a long time trying to find their own way of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And their own way of like how they imagine a story needs to be told, and then getting your and like, because like for me, I do geek out on lyric construction and wordplay and all these sorts of things, and it's just trying to walk that fine line between how much do you want it to be about wordplay and how much do you want it to have any content, or you know, and just try to get the balance right.
I don't really want to go into the political side of stuff because you're probably exhausted talking about Scottish independence, and you know, I think we're both very much of the same opinion about what we want to happen. If it ever does happen, has there ever been a time when you have either been recording or you've been performing, and there's something that you've written that has meant something, or you know, you've just written from a personal perspective, and it's kind of not been till that moment you've performed it or been in a certain situation and it's become quite overwhelming and it's kind of caught you?
Yes. Quite a few songs probably over the last couple of Stanley Odd records. I would put them in two different categories. I'd put them in the political songs or the personal songs categories. But you're right. I think the whole of Scotland is suffering political fatigue just now.
Mm-hmm.
Like the number of things that we've been asked to make big decisions about and fully engage with over the last like 4 or 5 years, it has had a total like numbing effect, an exhausting effect.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think you're totally right about the politics thing. In terms of like people's responses to stuff, I think. A song called Marriage Counselling on Reject, which we never play live because we never sorted the music out for it, and I found that people started asking for it, so we ended up doing it a cappella sometimes in 2014, and just I didn't really realise like how much of an impact it was having on people. Just the reaction sort of thing was quite intense.
And what about you though? Has it ever made you kind of either falter, or you've had to take a moment just to go, right, okay, maybe this is a bit too emotional, or...
I found that at times with two tunes, one called Carry Me Home and one called Draw Your Own Conclusions from A Thing Brand New, because they were more personal songs.
Yeah. Carry Me Home is massively deep, isn't it, really?
It is, aye, and it's dead... It's dead honest and autobiographical, and I wrote it when I was in a total bit of a crisis in terms of what I was, how I was behaving and what I was doing, and just didn't feel really in control of myself very much. So it was cathartic to write, and that felt like, I remember the couple of months, and I felt like getting the words written down and getting the song written felt like a sort of quite a big emotional process, you know, mm-hmm. and then actually playing it the year after, we played it quite a lot. It always felt like, I mean, I kind of joked about it, but it did feel like a big sort of group therapy session, like actually playing it live. And it was a good feeling mm-hmm. to actually just say it and get it all out loud.
Yeah.
So that was quite cool. And then sometimes that happens a bit with Draw Your Own Conclusions, because it's just quite an emotional story, so it kind of you can kind of get caught up in that a bit.
And on the new album, is there a song that really kind of maybe encapsulates the whole experience of making that album?
It's funny. I think partly I'm interested to see what the songs sound like live at the moment,
yeah.
to see, because no one's heard them, and also I'm waiting to feel what people react to them. I think the first and last tunes summarise the content of the record, and the last one probably even more than anything else. So Reconstruction, the first idea with Reconstruction was about that idea about identity and how you sort of piece yourself together before you present it to anybody every day. And how that identity, so the first verse is literally piecing your body together, but it's like about how you do that. And then the second verse, you step outside, so it's about how your external factors contribute to that. And then the last song, Deconstruction, sort of criticises and takes apart the record itself. So it's like, the first two of the three verses on the last song are sort of questioning what, the truth of the record itself.
But in its truest form, it's a body of work, and it works from start to finish. There's a narrative throughout. I hear so many records that are so kind of disconnected, and there's too many tangents. And whilst it's great to have, you know, no song is, it's not repetitive throughout, there has to be some kind of variation there, but at the same time it works cohesively.
You definitely want to I mean, that's brilliant to hear, because that's, you do want to have it threaded together, mm-hmm. and that's what I was hoping to do. The titles of the songs even were meant to do that, so from Reconstruction to Deconstruction, and Reconstruction, Where the Sun Rises, so it starts like the start of a day, and Deconstruction, Where the Sun Sets,
yeah.
but it was also, Reconstruction was written in Edinburgh in the east, Where the Sun Rises, and Deconstruction was written once we moved here in the west, so the whole thing, there's loads of things that probably don't mean anything to anyone else, you know, but to me felt like they tied it all together. And trying to just make sure that it felt like that there was a story all the way through, and I think the last verse of the last song, the form changes completely as well, and it almost becomes like I felt like I was writing that almost like my audience was my own kids or something like that, or my audience was changing for that last song. Mm-hmm. And the message, if there was any at all, was kind of like, it's okay to contradict yourself, yeah. and not be sure who you are.
So Loki, you picked one of his, so Moonlight Flitting,
mm-hmm.
And you put this down as an honourable mention. Honourable mention. Loki.
Yeah, I put it down because I'd already exceeded my six track
right
list.
Well, let's talk about Loki. So yeah. He's really become quite a recognised, you know, person,
mm-hmm.
for obviously for his work before, but more so now for his writing and his commentary and so on.
Summer of 84 hot me like a kicking fetus going cold turkey in the womb of an alcoholic dependent teenage murder with no money. So trust me, the 80s were the fuck time to grow up, mate. From the nervousness in the kitchen, breathless, lyric with a death wish, cigarette for breakfast, grabbing the pen, tense rigid with a clenched fist, inching ever closer as I'm scribbling a reminisce, cold ambience, grey, a roaring ambulance, stray kids on smack, overdosing like the fathers did, we juxtapose the type of West End affluence that built the roads to set in stone, Maggie Thatcher's arrogance. I remember, militants were stirring, junkies were as rife as Tory government corruption. Well below the breadline, the schemes grew weaker while the children developed a taste for wine by observing their seniors. While she sent the working class soldiers to die in Argentina, masquerading as a world leader. We were left to our devices on the streets, being rallied by the calls of the activists and public speakers. Back when Tommy Sheridan personified hope in the tenements, the socialist message was spreading, yet the Tories let the local areas get levelled while Thatcher pinned the Falkland War medals on the veterans. Sheriff's officers attempted to enter a person's residence to reclaim the last of their possessions, even though nobody paid tax because they were penniless. Militants formed chains protecting what was left of us. We stood firm, poll tax protests, sheriff's officers sent packing home with broken legs. What the hell did they expect? Was their perception that the residents would greet them with a welcoming reception? It's a housing scheme. If you don't know the place, that's where they knock down the schools to build motorways. Statistically, little Jimmy's chances of living till he's 60 are currently 50-50 and he's 15. Alcoholics, drug addiction, literally the economic hangover of the collapse of industry. So the West End can go to hell with Haddles. It's the perfect example of what went wrong with Glasgow. This is not a sob story. Poor me, what I've written's a depiction of how the poverty's stricken are living. I can't live without injustice, it's spiritually sickening. Something needs to be done this minute, innit? You can sit there, observe, contemplate about yourself, your good health and all the things that you think you deserve. I'm livid. True grind vivid when your new life begins after a moonlight flitting. By now Thatcher had ruined the lives of Britain. MPs were as useful as doing right by the system, and school was nice for the distance but could decide your religion. Maggie sacrificed a United Kingdom for middle England. It was a cool June 1989, full moon, damn roof dripping. Mum was in a good mood, assumed she might have been drinking. My dad was due in a minute, so she would go and plank a bottle of wine in the kitchen, which was the right decision, hidden with precision, and told me not to tell him about the guy that came visiting. He take all his vinyl in her television. That's when I heard a faint cry in the distance. She never even noticed, but it gave me the jitters. Look outside, poor light, no vision, as the rain lashed on the cracked windows in the cold kitchen. I caught a glimpse of a shadowy figure dashing in the distance. I said I chewed on my ninja figures. I seen someone lying lifeless near the entrance of a homely yet semi-detached prison. Suddenly it moved and look up at the living room in which the three of us were sitting. It was him, my father, half dead on the garden path, beating within an inch of existence. In the clutch, she should have paid the prick, but she'd sold everything except my shoes, or wine and my sister. The poor life sickening, true grind vivid, and your new life begins after a moonlight flitting. A crook might have killed him over a few lines for sniffing. It's a cruel life for living. 10 years later, I decide to leave quietly, seek sobriety and leer in this evil society. Pleaded insanity to meet the one he inherited this planet's travesty. I grabbed my backpack and ran away. Rather a dead drunk mom than an innate bum chum. See how far your love runs when he sees your father's trust fund. No wonder half the old school don't like me. I was like hippies trying to babysit a child in the 90s. My tragic mother, my father would never lift a hand to her, and I knew that man loved her. But it was us or the drugs, one or the other, and that junkie scum had done my dad turned out to be my ma's half brother.
Who's looking to you?
Well, I mean, I've been familiar with his work for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been impressed with him as a writer. I think he manages to embody the thing in hip-hop in terms of authenticity about representing global values and local culture idiosyncratically. So like if it's a global, the global values might be the techniques, the style, the delivery, and then the local element would be representing like Scottish culture or elements of Scottish culture or his own background, and then the idiosyncratic would be managing to do that in an individual and original way. So I feel like he always manages to marry those things really well. And then Moonlight Flit in that particular song, I just think Scatterbrain's production is brilliant, and again it's one of those ones that where the words and the music just mesh perfectly. I think it's a really good piece of writing because it describes a place and a time in the 1980s and 90s in West Coast Scotland, and then it moves from a sort of social commentary aspect to a personal storytelling aspect. Mm-hmm. So it just like strikes me as a really good example of like a blueprint of a good hip hop tune.
Your album All These People Are Me is out 4th of May.
Yes.
Is this the period that you crap yourself?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a while since I've done anything like to promote stuff or anything like that. So,
is it nice to be back?
It's nice to be talking about it.
Yeah,
it is nice to be talking about it. And it's I'm nervous because I just want to get the record out.
Yeah, for every musician I've spoken to before their album coming out, this is the hardest period for them. It's not something that I can relate to, but I see it and constantly, and I have a great amount of respect. You've got live dates coming up as well.
Yeah, we've got not a huge number, but a small tour. We're doing Stag and Dagger, which will be great.
Yeah.
Did that a couple of years ago with Stanley Ludd and it was brilliant, so yeah. I'm looking forward to that one. It's me and Harvey Cartel live, so it's going to be like live beats and samples and loops and
wow.
Me. Then we're doing the Toll Booth, and the sort of launch party, if you like, is at the Mash House in Edinburgh. And we're doing a couple of dates in Bristol and Manchester with Ari, they're a good man as well. So yeah, it's good. I think we might sneak a Noiriki thing in somewhere as well.
Well, I want to wish you the best of luck, and I want to say thank you for coming to speak to me.
No,
and
pleasure, as
it's
always.
A stunning record, and I think it's going to, I think it will connect with people.
Who the fuck am I? I'm a beautiful butterfly.
If the storm has morphed into an alarm at 5 a.m, became a pressurized canister for rage and leaked into a lab rat, rabid in the cage. That's the bell for last orders, people drank up. A broken puppet collapsed with the strings cut, feeling like a treasonous plot on Guy Fawkes' night, melting down an iron lung into a hot knife. I was born to make threadbare soul music, in a form from fresh air and cold fusion, with my elbows on the table but mealtime. I'm a fictional character in real life, catching reflections in a shard of broken glass. She caught my breath and stole my heart, I hope it lasts. I've been that question that you shouldn't have asked, in a dead leg with 1 foot in the past. Come on. I'm a jaggy nettle in the dark and leave split personalities, half of which won't even talk to me. My delusions are grandeur floating in my heap, the cross of puzzle answers that nobody can complete. Once I was a pessimist, they hear the rubber bullets, there I'm trouble brewing, and I'm about to do something stupid, making me a long weekend in the cells with no charge. On a moss cup, I'm stone in the boneyard. I've been that common sense, it seems like it's loose. A hot breath flying through that window of opportunity. The hammer to break glass in case of emergency. So I'm beautiful, created in the face of adversity. I like counting things in fives, cause I've got OCD. Shimmy, shimmy, yeah, I like it raw, piece to ODB. I'm an excuse for one more medicinal drink. And the answer to all your problems written in invisible ink.
And help it and feed in the streets. Answer this plea to express my freedom of speech about the evils of people shoving gear up my beat. Then give up rapping on beats just when I'm needing my peak. They dream on my feet, so I'll never dream when I sleep. I'll palm the other cheek only to go in with the heat. Lay out a whole deck of tarot cards like read them and weep. Cause every day of the week, all these people are me.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.